Well, hello. Welcome to the Digital Rabbi podcast. And great to be here with an awesome guest. It's Philippa Hanna, everybody.
Hey.
Hey, Philippa. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really well, you know. And thanks so much for coming on to the podcast. And I said this to you before, but whenever I talk to someone interesting or think of someone interesting, I'm like, I need to get you on the podcast. We need to hang out. So thanks so much for coming on today. Do you want to just tell anyone who doesn't know what you do, just maybe give us a bit of a picture to Philippa Hanna?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a singer-songwriter, always have been. The first thing I remember doing is singing and writing songs, even from a childhood kind of age. And it's all I ever wanted to do. All the way through my childhood, I started to record and produce when I was about 13, to work with other producers, to kind of get music out there. I had a bit of a weird relationship with the idea of becoming famous because I sort of wanted the success, but wasn't really sure if I could be in the spotlight. That sort of gave me a lot of anxiety, as did the idea of performing live, gave me a lot of anxiety. And actually, anxiety was quite a theme in my teens. I struggled quite a lot with my mental health. And so left school with like one plan to become famous and I guess find a record deal somehow. Really struggled with that journey for many reasons. Had some other personal things going on. And then at the age of 20, I found faith. And through some friends, through music, I ended up attending an event and had a really deep spiritual encounter at this event, which changed my life forever. And at that point, I picked up guitar and started writing a whole new sort of song. And actually, I probably felt like it was the first time I'd written a really personal song that was really true to me. So that became my career. I ended up just doing that full time, traveling, touring, churches, outside of churches. I ended up writing a few books. And I guess you could say I sort of live somewhere in the middle of the church world and just the regular music industry, because I'm a singer-songwriter through and through, and my faith is central to that.
That's amazing. Well, I've loved just watching your journey from afar, but also back in the day, used to do a few gigs in your band. That was awesome. Great experience as a young musician. And I think to see what you've built is really cool, because you mentioned the books, and I think when I look at your sort of social media presence and what you do, you know, it really is much more than just music. Like, you've built community. You've not just built sort of fans who think you're great, but you really have built sort of a very sort of personal kind of connection with a lot of people. And I think that's really cool. Can you tell us a bit about that? Was that always the intention to build community, or was that something that came a little bit later? Or yeah.
And I actually never expected that to happen, because socially, I've always felt a bit awkward, a bit out of the box, and it wasn't always easy to find my people at school. I would say, like, now I've got great girls in my life, but I wasn't really a girl's girl at school. I got on better with the guys, and I think that was just because, I don't know, it just seemed like they were a little bit less complicated, if I can say that, and just easier to connect with. So, and musicians, I mean, like, musicians are my people, artisty people, like, seem to be my people. So I never expected to,
yes,
to actually connect with others in that way. But what happened was, I think just through my vulnerability of saying, okay, this is me, really, I'm not, you know, I'm on a journey, I'm not perfect, I haven't got it figured out, I'm wrestling with these areas of my faith and these areas of my personal life. I just felt like it really drew people in, and it taught me a lot about people, actually, in that we have two selves a lot of the time. We have like an exterior self that we put on for the day, but then we have like the real stuff that's going on. And if we can get to that other person, we can have the most amazing connections and amazing conversations.
Yeah. Okay. That's really interesting. Let's talk about vulnerability, because yeah, that's definitely something I see in the way you kind of communicate online in particular. Like you are right. Like, vulnerability is so important, and it's probably something I've probably, I don't know. I think it's an evolving journey of learning, finding that kind of right balance, how much to share. But I think just opening up and allowing people to see that you're human and you've got weakness and you're on the journey, and I think as much as we say, yeah, I'm human, I've got witnesses, I'm on the journey, there's still like a part of your heart that you have to like open up and walls to come down. Particularly thinking of like leaders who might be listening in now, whether that's in the church or they're leading people and teams at work and things like that. How is it that you were able to be vulnerable? Because I don't think everybody is. Was that just something you've always been able to just lean into, or did you have to learn how to do it?
I think songwriting is a really good vehicle for vulnerability because you have like this safe space of a song. And from those songs, I have been, you know, in my dialogue a lot more vulnerable and in my conversations a bit more vulnerable. But the song sort of provides that little escape room or something, like this little sort of breakout room where you can just unload. And I think music is that for a lot of people, even when they go see live music or when they have their personal time with music, it is that space to be yourself. That, and I think music sort of like unlocks that in people. So that made it a lot easier. But it is very interesting, the Christian journey, the leadership journey. I've been working in a church for a year, just kind of, it was like a post-lockdown, postpartum venture really, sort of trying to lock in somewhere local and, you know, have community for Ozma, my little girl, things like that. I really wanted to be static for a bit. So I've been working for a church, and I think striking that balance between sort of, you know, not spooking the herd by always telling them how terrified you are, but at the same time, helping them to understand that you're not like some superior type of human. You're exactly the same as anyone else. And you're performing a job, trying to gather people and shepherd them and teach them and help them. But, you know, you are vulnerable. In fact, if you can't admit that you're vulnerable, that makes you extremely vulnerable.
Wow.
Like, I think some really bad things can happen if you're not real about your vulnerability. And if you don't look your vulnerability in the face, you become in denial about it, which is pretty dangerous, I would say.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I love what you just said, that we're all vulnerable. So it's almost like vulnerability is not, it's not something you sort of practice. It's just reality. Like you are vulnerable. Like you do need people. That's amazing. And I love what you said there about music, because I think that's very true. You know, how do you see the role of music in, let's say the church, just in life? You know, what do, because, you know, I always think it's amazing that just like, you know, the world is full of so much, so many almost like different expressions of beauty and communication and artistry that just don't really need to be there, but they are there. And it's like, if it didn't exist, you wouldn't know about it, you know, but it just seems the way God has created the world is full of all of this wonderful stuff. Like, where do you see music kind of sitting, and maybe just like the purpose of music, you know, cause can you talk about that a little bit?
I think there are many, many purposes of music. And in terms of the church and the Christian journey, I feel like what we underplay is the scripture where it talks about, and I always forget the numbers of scriptures, but scripture where it talks about encouraging each other with spiritual songs and hymns and psalms. Because I feel like that's always been what I do without kind of realizing it. Often in church, we think worship is one man and a guitar, maybe a lady, but usually one man and a guitar at the front of the church. There are words on screen. There's an up song. There's three mid-tempo songs. There's a ministry moment. And that's music in church. But, you know, scripture tells us that it's a ministry tool, you know, where we can share life and tell stories. And so that's kind of... And I did that natural, that God's so good that he sort of put that in me without me knowing what it was.
Right.
And so I then would travel and tour in churches and sing these songs, which are about life and about humanity and faith and things like that. And people would, I could literally see people going, oh, wow, I really wasn't expecting this. Like I was expecting the usual sort of rhythm of how music appears in church. And I think people get really refreshed when things are different.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I love that. Just the idea, it's just a tool to share life, and that goes outside of the walls of the church, of course. Just full stop. You know, what are some of the things we can do? You know, I'm thinking, you know, for young people growing up in this world, we want to create an environment, don't we, where those sort of things are celebrated. But you know, this pressure, you got to get a normal job, you got to make money, you got to, you know, survive and thrive and all that sort of stuff. And then music and artistry often feels like it's got to be a side. It's got to be a, you know, it's just not a priority. I don't know. Is there anything you can maybe just help us understand about, you know, you mentioned your daughter, but, you know, for parents raising kids or teachers in schools, you know, what are some of the things we need to shift about the way we see and release creativity and the arts full stop?
I think it's really important to stay humbly open-minded about what people are going to do with their lives, because it can look a million different ways, you know, infinite. There are infinite options for people as they enter the world. I mean, I remember going for my careers advice meeting at the age of 14, 15, and the best they could come up with is there's a local college course about, you know, about singing or something like that. That was the best they could come up with. And they didn't have any idea what I might be able to do for a job. Like, that was just, you know, well, that could keep you going in the meantime kind of right. thing while you figure it out. And I just feel like the possibilities really are endless. And I've probably had more stability, weirdly, I've probably had more stability in being self-employed than in any job I've ever had. People tend to mistake employment for stability. But it really isn't, you know, it's actually all your eggs in one basket is what it is. And, you know, there may be options for you in, you know, with a career choice, with a career path. You know, if you study medicine, for instance, there are many hospitals you could work in probably. But, you know, as far as like going and getting a steady job or working for a company for your whole life, there are no guarantees on that.
That's true.
And, you know, I actually know a lot of people who have been in steady jobs for years who are being made redundant right now or having their hours reduced. In being self-employed and being an entrepreneur, you actually get the option to wake up in the morning and think, how can I make money today? And how can I turn what I do? What are the many ways that I could bring income in through what I do? And I find that exciting. It was scary at first. But I think it's one of those things, and you probably know this as well, is like you layer it up over time. You see what works. You try and be wise when money does come in. You don't think, oh yeah, it's a payday, let's go on holiday. Like, you sometimes have to be like, okay, that was a good month, let's see how next month goes. And yeah, but I find it an exciting ride.
Yeah, that's such a funny idea, like the reversal of how we see sort of like the steady job. And actually really interesting because, of course, technology is changing everything. And we've got AI, which is like just appearing, still trying to get my head around. But we're going to see a lot of jobs are going to change because of that sort of technology. And you're right, there are no guarantees. So I suppose that the great thing about this self-employed approach is you're starting with chaos from day one. So when chaos comes later, you're actually, it's not really much of a drama. Can you talk to us more about the business side of you know, what you've built? You talked about layers on layers. And I don't know if you've got any insights even around, you know, did you have to learn how to do business? Because as a creative person, you're doing your craft, you're creating what you're creating. You know, how have you actually built a business from that? Something that you can, you know, support your family with? And also just have, in terms of, I'd love to hear just your thoughts on money itself, because I think that's sometimes one of the things we get stuck around, just our mentality around money. Anything you can say there?
Yeah, I'll start with that. So my relationship with money has taken a bit of a beating over the pandemic, because I think I got so used to just sort of taking every and any opportunity because of being self-employed, working holidays, weekends, evenings, when I should be sitting watching a Netflix series, I'm actually doing emails and with my half an eye on Netflix. Like, that's, I've been, I wouldn't say a workaholic because it's not an addiction. It's like a fear-based compulsion.
Interesting.
And so I think that I was a bit like that for the years leading up to the pandemic. And it was honestly like God really used it as a reset for my mentality. Because really, I believe he's called me to be a faith-sharing singer-songwriter and author. I believe that with all my heart. And so I have to rely on him and believe that he is going to find a way to provide for us as a family. I have to play my part in that, but ultimately I don't have to strive and control every moment of that. And so I've been learning to sometimes just wait and see what happens. And, you know, just sort of lean on him for the opportunities because things change. You know, we had to change the way we did things in lockdown, did more things online. My husband went and did a courier job for the year. Like, you do have to sort of adapt. But I think it's really important not to be sort of at the mercy of the fear of poverty, especially as a creative. And even, you know, in doing some of the jobs that I've done where I've made a commitment, let's say I've made a commitment to working for a charity 17 hours a week or whatever. And then I find that that is really not good for my soul for whatever reason, you know, like it doesn't feel like the right charity or it doesn't feel like the right focus or it's taking me away from time with my child, whatever it is. I really felt God speak to me about that. Just to never use the language, I've got no choice. Because I feel like there are choices. And especially when it comes to the health of your soul, when it comes to your spiritual and mental health, you can't be like, I've got no choice. I've got to go and do this work. I've got to stay up till all hours to get this done. God really challenged me on that. So that was that one. I don't know if that's helpful.
That's really good.
And how have I made my work into a business? And the most important thing in that scenario was somebody else. Because as a creative, one of the things I struggled with the most was self-belief, actually. And I think that's a big problem for entrepreneurs in the beginning, for anyone starting a business, and especially the creative types who are bearing their soul through a song or a piece of art. I really struggled to ask people for money in return for that. And, you know, you know Andy Baker, he's a friend of ours, and he came alongside me in that season, and he was the opposite of me. He was like, you know, someone's going to like this. Let's just give it a go. And you'd be surprised how many people want to come alongside you. And even if you create something, whatever it is, there are going to be people out there who see what you do and appreciate it, or they actually see that you are trying to do something with your life that's brave, and they want to come alongside you for that reason. And so, yeah, he helped me to, he would always say to me, you're not asking people for money. You're giving them the opportunity to sow into what you do. And so that really helped me. But I'm still on a journey with that, because when people offer me money to go and sing places, I always feel like I can't believe it still. Like, it always feels like this is too good to be true. And so I have to just sort of like switch off that part of my brain a little bit and just, it does help. This might be helpful for someone, to sort of pretend I'm someone else when I'm behind the keyboard a little bit, you know, when I'm sending out my price list or when I'm, whatever it might be, when I'm saying, actually, no, that's not quite enough. I need a little bit more because I'm going to be away for 2 days and I'm going to have to get childcare. When you're having those conversations, it's good to sort of try to be a little bit more like an AI rather than a human.
That's awesome. I love that. That is like so interesting, super interesting. And I think, you know, I love the thing you said there about, like, you know, you don't quite believe it sometimes. It's like the idea that you could do the thing that you love and get paid for it. And one of the things I've realized is actually, like, this is, we're on a journey towards that, a lot of us, and we're trying to navigate and figure that out. But this is really God's plan, is that, you know, we've all got something unique to contribute to this world that is of value. And if it's of value, it is valued. Let's say it brings something to people. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. Really, really appreciate it. Let's talk about the books then. So when did you write your first book, Philippa?
I wrote the first book alongside the first album, and it was just a bit of a behind the songs kind of explanation. And it was really because I was doing it on stage and people suggested I would love to see that written down or hear it recorded. So that was the first little venture, and that's not in print anymore. But the second one, I really felt like I wanted to share my testimony, my sort of faith journey. I'd kept a list. Because as a creative new Christian, I couldn't believe like the concentration of coincidence that right. suddenly appeared in my life. So it sort of went from feeling like, you know, you would have the odd thing that would fall into place, but it honestly felt like everything was coming together in that season, and relationships that were forming, friendships, all of that stuff, little miracles, little incidents of provision, answered prayer. I was experiencing that in such a crazy volume. I was like, I need to keep a list. So I kept a list of everything that seemed to happen, like a bit of a journal, and made it into a book. And I'm sort of amazed by, because it's little everyday miracles, which are not that, you know, okay, so you run out of milk and someone turns up on the doorstep saying, do you need an extra pint of milk today? Like that, you know, it's not Vatican level sort of stuff, but for your journey, for your, you know, like for your connecting with God, your relationship with God, learning to trust him in the small things. Mm. I found that really significant. And I've had a lot of feedback on that book from people who just said it was really sort of easy, gripping read that they've really enjoyed, and it helped them with their faith. So who knew?
Yeah, wow. How did you know, like, what to do, like, in terms of, like, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of things in the process of both the writing, editing, you know, publishing. Like, how did you figure out all of those sort of new skills, you know, to navigate that process?
Again, I think, you know, my friend Andy Baker was in my life a lot at that time, and he was helping me to, he would read books, he would give me advice, he would point me in the direction of things like podcasts. There wasn't as much podcasting then, but anything that might help, and just a few tips here and there from other Christian authors that I would bump into, people like Adrian Plass and Jeff Lucas. They kind of gave me a few tips. And the biggest tip, actually, from our friend Dave Gilpin, he once told me not to edit myself as I was writing, just to keep the stream of consciousness flowing, you know, sort of like download all of the content and then look back at it and then reshape it. And that's actually a really good tip for songwriting as well.
It is, yeah.
Just to sort of, I describe it as putting some clay on the wheel. Like, you need something on the wheel. You don't want to be staring at an empty potter's wheel or an empty blank page and a bunch of paint. You want something to work with. So I think it's good just to get going. And the hardest thing for any creative is to get started. The hardest part. And you will walk around your kitchen and you'll make another cuppa and you'll get the washing out and you'll just take this phone call and you'll do anything but sit down and actually get on with it. And that's the hardest part. So, like, just open the laptop. Just open it up.
Yes.
And if you only write one paragraph that whole day, you've done something. And that second paragraph will be all the easier that you just got started.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think the self-editing thing is huge. Like, there's so much in us and in people, and it's like, no, I don't want to share that. I think for me, like, I don't know when it was, 3 or 4 years ago on social media, I just suddenly realized people are looking, when you post something, people look at it. And before that, I was very much just a sort of post your lunch sort of social media guy. But the realization that actually, you know, people are looking, and they look, and before you know it, you become known as someone who's posting all the time and people connect with what you're doing. And the practice of putting yourself out there and just being willing. And I guess that's where you're coming back to the whole vulnerability piece, isn't it? It's just like daring to just share something and people don't like it, you'll be okay. Well, you've just become, or recently, you've become a mum. So how's that been? And how's that changed the way you see, well, I was going to talk about music, but I think it's probably just life. It's probably going to be a life-altering sort of change. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
I feel like it's difficult for any parent. The first couple of years are really tough. She's just turned 2. And
oh, wow.
I mean, like, the main struggles are sleep deprivation, time management, and then for women who've had the baby themselves, there's the whole physical side of it and the sort of body adjustment, which you think you can imagine what that's going to be like. You'd be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to put on some weight and then it'll come out and then I'll come back together. And it's not really like that at all. It's like your entire body chemistry changes.
Yeah.
So the way your body processes food and sleep and ideas and everything, like, I think you change. And it hit me actually. She was in the bath just before her second birthday, and I was just, you know, adoring her as you do when you're sort of bathing your child and playing and brushing teeth, just adoring her in the bath. And I realized what had happened and why it was so difficult for me. I think before you have a child, you are the center of your universe. Even though you might have a spouse, you're still number one. Like, you are the center of the universe and you're looking out at the world. And when you have a child, especially, I don't know, I can't speak for a dad, but definitely as a mum, they are now the center.
Yes.
So like every thought, every plan, action, it all comes from this nucleus of them. It's almost like they've taken over the brain.
Wow.
And I think that was hard for me. And so I struggled with postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression because,
wow,
I think hormones, but I think also that, I think just like, wow, this person, now I am living my life for them. I am living their life for them because they can't do anything for themselves. And I think because I had babies later as well, because I'm in my 30s, I think personally that's probably a little bit longer of you being the center of the universe, and so perhaps a little harder. But you had kids quite young, didn't you?
I think we had our first kid 26. But yeah, I think you're right, because I know for me, like, there's something happened when Jemima, our eldest, was born, like, in me that didn't happen for the rest. and it was just this indescribable part of my heart opened up that I just didn't even know was there. And it was just like, yeah, it was just completely overwhelming. But that didn't happen for the other three at all. It was like, it's already opened. So I feel a bit bad for them, but it's all right. But yeah, I think just that shift. And I think it is probably similar to what you're describing there. Just that, wow, you know, there's something else here that I want to just, I think the thing that happened for me is just like every dream. I'm quite a sort of like future oriented person. I've kind of got big thinking. I'm like, oh, I want to do this. I want to go there. And it was just like everything I'd ever dreamed of doing just became like really rubbish. I was just like, I don't care about any of those things. Like, this is like, if this is the only thing I do is just raise my kids. Oh man, what a wonderful thing. But I enjoy seeing, you're very, sort of almost,
yeah,
public with your, you know, with your parenting, aren't you? You know, you share a lot about the process. And again, I see that sort of, that vulnerability that we're talking about that is continued. You know, is that something you've been deliberate about, or is that just the sort of natural kind of direction? Yeah.
Well, when she was first born, I was actually thinking, I'm not going to share her at all. She's only for me. And it took me about 4 days. And then I was obsessed with sharing about her. And I'm not really sure why. I just think it is just like wanting to capture these little moments in a bottle and never forget them. And I feel like when I publish them, it makes that more likely that, you know, they're out there. So hopefully I'll never forget this moment. And it is lovely. And I do get lovely feedback from people that say, you know, Ozma sort of makes our day. Mm. Thank you so much for posting when she says a funny word or when she does a silly laugh or whatever. I get people saying it really brightens up their life. And I noticed an amazing increase in engagement when I started sharing my mum journey, which is exciting. You know, it's exciting to know that people are sort of watching and engaging and enjoying. And it's like, you know, I could post a million sort of gig advertisements and, hey, now trickle of like one picture of Ozma and it's like boom. Everybody's sort of switched on to that. So yeah, I think it's just a lovely feeling of being surrounded. There was a bit of it that I didn't like. There's a couple of comments in the early days of people trying to tell me what to do differently, and I didn't like that.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm not open to help. It's just that I don't know you.
Right.
Like,
yes.
And, you know, and you don't really know what's happening here. You're only seeing bits of it.
Yeah.
So that side of it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I think there seems to be less of that now. So maybe I just blocked a few people and
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, we're coming into a close, Philippa. Really appreciate you being on and all of your time. And I think everyone's got some great kind of input from here. I wonder, maybe just for last couple of minutes, you mentioned just kind of some of your journey with anxiety, depression. How can you just talk a little bit maybe now and past, like, how have you navigated that as a Christian? I think, you know, there's the conversation on mental health is a big conversation. It's a really important conversation today in particular. But I think, you know, we as churches are still learning how to talk about these things. There's still lots of stigma, ideas around therapy. Like, people, there's a lot of like contrasting thought in the mix. I wonder if you could just maybe just share from your perspective, just maybe some things we can do, maybe as church leaders or even as business leaders, you know, to create the right environment for health, yet still be full of faith. And just that, I think that integration of spirituality, spirit, mind, body, emotions, just the whole package, because that's really what God's into,
right?
Isn't he? He wants us to be whole and well, and but navigating that and navigating that journey. I'm sure you've got loads you could say, so I'll just pass that over to you.
Yeah, obviously I'm not a doctor or a psychologist, and I don't have any sort of academic expertise in this area, just my own experience and my own research.
Yeah.
I have done quite a lot of research in my own sort of quest for wellness and understanding. And I've met a lot of people also who struggle because of, I'm open about my struggles. And I think what you said about mind, body, soul, or whatever sort of version of that you just said, it really is that. So when you come across someone with a mental health disorder, whether it's diagnosed or undiagnosed, if someone's depressed, let's say, and they say to you, I am depressed, or they might not say that I'm depressed, they might say, I feel hopeless, I don't know what to do, I don't want to get out of bed. They might describe more like the symptoms of depression or the state of being depressed. You're looking at somebody who is battling on three levels,
right?
Spiritually, mentally, and physically. And it could be one or all of those things that is the trigger and the root of it. It's usually a mixture of all three. So now I've had postpartum, I can say categorically that the body can induce depression with no, I mean, there might be exterior stuff as well, but things you would normally cope with, you can't cope with. And even, I would say, like, even in the sort of now postpartum, after having a baby, my body responds differently to the normal hormones that a woman encounters. And I can feel normal one day, like, oh, it's a nice day, I'll go and do the shopping, I wonder what emails I've got to respond to. And then the following day, when hormones kind of switch, tank, whatever they do, I can feel like, I really cannot face this day. I cannot have a conversation with someone right now. And so I've really seen the evidence of that, that the body can be the trigger. And then it also can be what's going on in your head that triggers something, you know, the way you're thinking, the stuff you're dealing with, the conversations you're having, what you're watching, you know, how your life is going, can have a huge impact, and that needs attention. And then there is the spiritual side, and I really believe that, I mean, what my experience is that I don't want to use this language necessarily, but for the sake of argument, let's just say the enemy or the forces of darkness, they prey on those vulnerabilities that I just mentioned. So you become extremely vulnerable spiritually when your body and mind are struggling. And so I think that's why it's actually, so there's that element of it. You can become really vulnerable to the darkness, I would say, and you can very much feel the darkness when you're struggling mentally and or physically. But also your spirit can be, the spiritual side can be what gets you through those other things. And I sort of remember at probably one of the darker moments of, because don't forget as well, I had my first baby in lockdown. So I was on my own with her all day, every day, you know, a crying, colicky newborn, the sound of crying for 6 hours straight or, you know, not being able to get her to sleep or not being able to feed her or whatever on my own completely because my husband had to work and my parents were vulnerable, so they couldn't visit. And so I remember probably at the darkest point of that thinking, wow, it's not well with my mind and it's not well with my body, but it is well with my soul.
Wow.
Like, I kind of know that beneath this, I'm all right and I'm going to be all right. And so I do think it's just important as the church, as church yes. leaders, just always to think, always to remember there's three elements to it. And so if you're trying to help somebody, they might need to talk about their life. They might need some help with their life. Like they might have a problem in their marriage or their work or whatever. They may well be struggling with something in their chemistry. Could be the menopause, could be, you know, that their brain is just on a big low because of so much difficulty in their life. Or it could be, and might also be something they need prayer for. And so it's, if we can just wrap those three things around someone, then hopefully that'll be a really good strategy.
Yeah.
To get them back on their feet again.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. I think, yeah, human beings are so complex. And I think it's the complexity that makes us so wonderful. It comes like together, doesn't it? And I think, you know, those three elements, yeah, it's big. Well, Philippa, thanks so much for being on today. Anything else you want to say just before we kind of close?
People can find me at philippahannah.com. Tour dates are on there. And also my music is on Spotify. My books and stuff you can get from philippahannah.com as well. And I'd always like to say hi if you're on socials.
Yes, that's awesome. Well, that was going to be my next question. How do people find you? But we got there. So yeah, do go check out Philippa's music if you haven't already. I'm sure you have. Go follow her. And yeah, Philippa, really appreciate you being on. This has been a really rich conversation. And it's been nice to catch up as well, hang out. So yeah, awesome. Thanks everyone for tuning into the Digital Rabbi podcast. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, all of that jazz. And we'll see you in the next episode. See you guys.